Okay, from now on when we take breaks, I'll be asking for a $5 deposit from each board member, refundable when they return on schedule to their seats. Otherwise, no one's going to be allowed to even go to the bathroom.
All right, it's time to reconvene. If everybody could please get into their seats and we could start the session, that would help. Thank you.
All right, man.
This All is right. my ultimate Frisbee coaching voice. A little shaky. Please sit down. Yep. I can get 17-year-olds who are playing Frisbee at 100 yards to get into a huddle. I can't get board members to see.
We're an independent lot. We are wrong.
Because they know I'm talking
or something.
We're something.
I guess. Block.
Block. All right, do we have one? What's a note? Hello?
Okay, guys.
We have a reduced
trouble when you are right.
That's right. You got it.
We have a reduced amount of time for the remainder of the licensing and distribution discussion.
Here goes Rob, license and distribution.
Okay, done. So we have less time than we had set out for this discussion, but we did take a certain amount of it during the legal discussion. The intent was to have a section of this updating progress on licensing and distribution initiatives, and also pointing to a couple of things that are happening outside of ourselves. And then also one of the real strong intents was to engage the managers and the program directors a little bit in a discussion about how distribution opportunities could be used to expand the amount of production going on in the signal area. Ambrose's suggestion at last meeting was that we be talking about outreach opportunities and how we were going to develop community-based programming. I don't know how much time we're going to have for all of that, but at least for the PDs and the GMs who are here, one of the things that I think the board is really interested in is how you can use these additional distribution opportunities to spur more programming in the signal area. And over time, I know it's something we'd want to hear about. With respect to the streaming rules and possible rules that are coming for downloaded content and license fees and the rest. I did want to start off by following up on a point that John Krigler made and John Almella alluded to, which is in the early stages when you have limited libraries of PodSafe music, you're limited in the range of music you have. But if you put that effort in over a period of time, you end up with an invaluable resource. And let me say why it's relevant. Larry Bensky sent around an email 2 days ago. Was it 2 days ago or yesterday? What was it 2 days ago? About the Gonzalez hearing. Yeah, it was 2 days ago. He did coverage of the Alberto Gonzalez hearing, and he said he pegged the KPFA stream. So that means he says usually democracy. I asked him for numbers. He said Democracy Now, and you guys correct me if these numbers aren't right, but according to Larry, Democracy Now is one of their biggest streamed offerings, and it hits about 350 streamed listeners. Obviously, downloads are much bigger than that. And he said Sunday Salon sometimes challenges that number. He maxed out their stream at 1,200 during the Gonzalez hearing. Now, if you listen to that programming, there is copyrighted music as bumper music in that. And so one of the questions is, what does that incur, both in terms of a cost for paying for it now with this decision, but also in terms of the overhead in tracking it? And my own opinion is that without very much effort, we could get a significant-sized library of PodSafe music such that you could have public affairs streams, and when you knew you were streaming events, you simply asked programmers, use this music. There are plenty of performers out there who could do it. As to the technological question, well, how do you manage this? How do you track this? Watermarking is a technology that allows you to sew into the fabric of an MP3 file an indication of its licensing. And Creative Commons is developing Creative Commons licensing. Watermarking. So when you're talking about management, within a year or two, what's very likely is that you're going to have software of the sort that YouTube uses, which detects whether there's a watermark in there that's defining it as either copyright controlled or available for use. So that the solution of how do you manage all this is also not an insurmountable technical barrier, and in fact is probably going to be addressed by people in the open source community with code in the very near future. The larger point is, do you want to do some work to organize your ability to build your own distribution strategy independent of what copyright holders are going to impose on you? And if there's work associated with that, how do we fund that work? And so what I wanted to report on briefly was a meeting I had with Andrew Rappaport of August Capital and the Rappaport Family Foundation. I flew up to Berkeley several weeks ago to meet with him. Mr. Rappaport is one of the largest progressive donors in the country. He's the primary funder of Death Penalty Focus in California, which is how I met him. I met him while doing a recording. Actually, I'll digress a little bit to tell you about this recording I did. This was in 2003, I believe, or 2003 or 4. And it was a death penalty focus event in Los Angeles, and one of our KPFK shows, the Lawyers Guild, wanted to do a remote from the show. They wanted to record it, but they didn't have any talent in the station that could help them do that. At the time, I was working with Sound Posse, this LA Sound Posse recording collective I was working with, and I agreed to do the show with him and do the remote for him, the engineering, if he agreed to license it in this way. And at that event, Mr. Rappaport spoke, and when he was honored for being the major funder for Death Penalty Focus, he spent the whole time talking about how the media was really the key battleground and how it was influencing his own daughter's consciousness, because his grandfather came to New York and helped bring Jews who were being persecuted in Russia to the United States in the early part of the century, and yet his daughter would come home with views about immigrants that he found so alien and so hostile to the work that his grandfather had done, two generations before, that he was really disturbed with what was happening in media. So I asked him, I went up to him after, and I asked him if he'd be interested in talking about open source media approaches, and he said yes. But I waited several years because I didn't know that we were ready as a foundation to act on that stuff. So with that as a background, in that conversation, I asked for $50,000 in seed funding to fund our initial efforts in this area. And the reason was that I'm recognizing that we need a lot more money than just this initial little bit that we talked about to get a three-month project going, and also because I think people feel as though it would be better to have, well, we should have more opportunities for people to be involved in some pilot work. And he didn't blink about the $50,000. The amount of money was not a big deal to him. And he also spoke about a number and gave me a list of a number of other institutions that are interested in doing major funding in this area. And I wanted the projector here, but it's not here. So I can't show you the Democracy TV website. But if it could be set up, that'd be great. He's a major funder of Democracy TV. And Democracy TV is a project of something called the Participatory Culture Foundation. And it has four components. Democracy Player, which is a desktop application for watching internet TV. Video Bomb, a website for sharing videos, creating personal video channels, and filtering up the best videos online. He says, a democratic playground for internet video. Broadcast Machine, software for publishing channels of video from your website. Installs easily, supports BitTorrent, creates a browsable gallery. BitTorrent, for those who don't know, is a way of sharing bandwidth around the net so you can have very rapid downloads of video content without having to pay large bandwidth costs. And then Channel Guide, It greets you when democracy starts up. The channel guide is an open listing of internet TV channels, video podcasts, blogs, and much more. So one of the questions is, you know, is Pacifica content going to be part of this growing movement of available media on the web? And if so, how are we going to position it so that it can be used? One of the key points is that depending on the way we license things, other platforms that are developing these kinds of technologies may or may not be able to include Pacifica content on it. So the way we position ourselves is going to be very important. More to the point, these sorts of organizations are organizations who we can partner with to do infrastructural technological development that we can't afford to fund ourselves. We have one national webmaster, and we have web talent at each station. KPFK, I think, is the best endowed in terms of web technical talent. You go to their website, and they have beautiful design work, and it's very, very good experience there. But in terms of total resources that we have available to us to develop in this area, I don't know that we can afford to fund the amount and levels of talent to build infrastructure that we would really want for the kind of platforms. Like when all the PDs spoke yesterday, they all said to us that one of the things they were concerned about was infrastructure. I don't know how much of that was the broadcast infrastructure and how much of it is the digital distribution infrastructure, but if we are advancing ourselves rapidly in this area, and positioning ourselves as a leader in this area, supporting a broader civic media, I think the funding is going to be there and the partnerships are going to be there. Getting back to what Rappaport said, he said a couple of things. One, he wanted to know what the money would be used for, and when I described the tasks that we needed, i.e. going around to each of the stations, developing best practices, figuring out how we were going to administer licensing, making sure the licenses had broad buy-in around the network. His response to me was, I'm not interested in the tasks. What I want to know is your outcomes. And so I want to know at the end of this funding period, what am I going to be able to go get access to, in what way, and how will it be licensed? And he said, if you can develop that, perfectly willing to provide seed funding for it. And again, he is already, and others are already, out there working with other major funders. Now, so there is other funding opportunities. They're aware of it. And John Krigler told me today that some of the money that Spitzer had gotten in the settlement on the, what was the case that he got all the money for? Does anybody know offhand? The Payless thing. There is still money available there for projects like this, and indeed, I think some of that was used to fund WFMU's podcast archive, right?
Yes.
Okay. So other groups are going to be doing this, and one of the things we need to decide as a board and as an institution is where are we in this expanding movement of civic media, and what role do we want to play? And we need to make the decision fairly soon. One of the points that Rappaport made toward the end of the meeting was he said, why should I fund you? This is going to happen anyway. What are you bringing to the table that's going to change anything? And it was really interesting, too. He said, content is easy. Content's cheap. He said, what's expensive and what's difficult is publicity, and what you have is transmitters. And so the difference that Pacifica makes, and to his thinking, the thing that we can do is use those transmitters to promote the existence of this broader community of content. Now, I don't know if everyone here would agree, and I don't even know if he's right, that high-quality content is easy or cheap. I think we could have a debate about that, but it's not necessarily worth debating. Like it or not, one of the things that Pacifica has to offer is the ability to promote these kind of efforts. So I'm going to wrap this up by saying, what we need to do, in my view, is get to a point where we can talk about concrete outcomes to potential funders. We can't do that without the buy-in of the managers and a discussion about what kinds of things people are willing to implement, interested in implementing, and can implement in a short seed funding pilot project period. What do you need? What would you want? And what would it lead to? if we can get to a point where we have a list of those things and a real commitment to do it, I'm willing to resign from the board and spend all my time fundraising. I don't know about the rest of you. But I think that the funds will be there. I plan to follow up with Mr. Rappaport. And it's my hope that one of the commitments we can get is to start using the digital distribution space to open up a lot more opportunities for production and to open up a lot more partnerships. The last point is just the restrictions are clearly going to be associated with copyright and opening that up. But for content that's born online, we can very easily establish for people who are used to being on the radio, some of the restrictions you might impose would be seen as onerous. But for stuff that's born online, there's no reason you can't say, we want you to use music from this pool to begin with in your public affairs programming. And if we could say, within a space of time, and I'll try and bring it back up, our modest proposal from last time, that each station will have developed a certain amount of new programming on the web that it uses its air to actively promote, that's licensed in this way, and that we've initiated PodSafe archives, by which I mean music archives of music recorded at each station with the artist donating to the Commonwealth, essentially, the CC hybrid licensed tracks that they come in and perform. We could very rapidly say, hey, look, here are the offerings that we're capable of producing. We could do this in a period of months. But we can't do it without the buy-in of the management who are essentially responsible for executing it. So I'm going to turn it over to Rob to talk a little bit about where we're at the Licensing and Distribution Task Force. And then I'm hoping we can have a discussion with the managers about some of the stuff that Ambrose has been raising about the need for more community-based programming and what we would need in terms of resources to make some of this stuff a reality. Once Rob talks, hopefully I'll have the video projector set up and can show you a couple of quick things.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the PNB, in your books, in your packets, you should have a copy of the Licensing and Distribution Task Force report. This group was set up by resolution passed last October. The motion was made by Bob Lederer. What we're focusing on at this time is developing an agreement that will enable Pacifica to redistribute content that's produced by unpaid staff at the local stations over the internet, for example, or for other digital distribution means. A copy of the agreement that we have, which is based on an agreement that Dan Siegel developed, is also attached. There has been extensive comment from unpaid staff, from, for example, the WBAI Unpaid Staff Organizing Committee. We've had representatives of management, the PNB, the local station boards as well on this group. So what we have right now is a draft agreement, again, that the unpaid staff producers will be able to sign, which will give, in effect, Pacifica the ability to redistribute their programming, some program or copies of individual programs, for as long as they want, over digital distribution methods. Right now, the problem is that it's not clear who the ownership, it has not been clear who owns content that's broadcast over the local stations, but produced by the unpaid staff. And so what we want to be able to do is give those staff the ability to formally give Pacifica the rights to rebroadcast it and tell Pacifica what types of broadcasts they want it to, if they only want it to be redistributed to Pacifica stations or to affiliates, that's fine. But if they agree to let it be redistributed under Creative Commons licenses, which will effectively allow people to see it and redistribute it, and again, the concept is that those things will have an imprint on it that will identify the copyright owner. This will also acknowledge for the first time that the unpaid staff do have ownership rights over the material that they produce on Pacifica. We feel that this is a way to be fair for them. So where we are in the process of this agreement now is that we've made changes to the agreement that reflect the interests of the unpaid staff. We are discussing about four or five more items in that agreement, and then we will forward it to Greg, who who will be able to then solicit the input of management. So, you know, we want, although there are people from management sitting on the committee, the managers will have another bite at the apple. John Krigler, the FCC counsel, will be able to vet this and make his comments, and then it will come back to our committee to submit to the PNB to go up or down. So we think it's very important that you understand that in the process that we're engaging in now, both management and unpaid staff and local boards as well as the PNB have had an opportunity to be involved in the process and have their input. And but before it comes back to the PNB, management and our FCC lawyer will have the ability to advise Greg on what they like, don't like. So there are a lot of issues here. I'm not going to go into them. Bob may want to make some points because he's been integral in the discussions. But let me try to finish where we go. Let me just mention some of the benefits of this. For example, up to now, it's not been clear that unpaid staff that do a lot of the production at our local stations, almost all, have rights to the content that they produce. This will, in fact, give them those rights so they may, in turn, be able to go out on their own and, for example, recoup some of their costs by selling CDs of shows from their own websites, which will help them keep doing what they've been doing now. It will enable Pacifica finally to begin distributing local station programming under the Pacifica imprimatur, which has not happened hitherto. We think that Pacifica, as a civic media broadcaster, will be able to bring a lot more content from all of the stations together, and that will enable us to reach a national audience that we don't currently have access to. The Creative License Commons process additionally will enable people that see this programming to also redistribute it as long as they redistribute it in accordance with the license. If the Creative Commons license says you can distribute this programming freely as long as it's non-commercially distributed and as long as you attribute it, so the attribution will indicate that it was produced by the Pacifica, you know, network, by station WBAI, you know, and the producers according to the metadata that we set up. It will also, as I said, pave the way for national audiences and international audiences over the Internet. And by the way, that means that we will continue to use our fundraising model, which is to ask the listeners to fund Pacifica to keep paying for this type of programming. So if programming goes out with an appeal on in the text of the document, it will not be able to be erased by somebody that rebroadcasts it. And of course, in order for us to go forward, this means that we will have to have agreements between Pacifica and the local stations that revenue that's generated nationally will be shared with the stations that produce the revenue, and that that revenue will also be shared with the producers. One of the things in speaking with Ken Friedman of WFMU, which has been a pioneer since the mid-90s of Internet radio, one of the important benefits that he said that it has been hard for him to explain to the producers is that by going on the Internet and by doing podcasting of programming, you set up relationships with listeners that's not really available over the radio. And the dialogues that have emerged between the producers and the programmers and their audiences have not only been helpful in terms of getting feedback on the programming, but they've found that the Internet audiences actually reward the station with membership as highly, and in some cases a little more highly. In other words, Internet audiences will pay at the same rate or higher rates than membership audiences will for FM radio. So that's another type of revenue sharing which we think is a critical benefit. But I think, again, it brings our producers into stronger partnership with the network, and it really opens Pacifica programming that's produced, regardless of what station, by the producers to national and international audiences that haven't been there before. A couple of statistics I just want to mention. When the hearings on the copyright royalty was going forward, one of the testimonies indicated that the Internet radio audience is now at 72 million people in the U.S. We know, for example, that Apple has sold over 100 million iPods, but they've been sold outside of the states. We think that there are between 75 and 100 million people with MP3 players now. We know, for example, that this year the MP3 industry will ship 40 to 50 million MP3 players within the continental United States. So the internet radio audience, with or without this confusion about the music royalties, is between 60 and 75 million people right now. The interesting thing, if you think back to Pacifica, we're not simply concerned with musical content. We're concerned with programming content, with news and public affairs, even on the internet, conceivably video content for Pacifica stations. And one of the statistics that you should think about, lest you think that the only thing that people look at are tightly produced commercial, you know, news, CNN downloads monthly 50 million copies of its programming, 50 million on a monthly basis. YouTube, which also includes stuff that people produce in their homes, downloads 100 million, it produces 100 million downloads every day. Every day. So the audiences have definitely gone digital. They have gone to the internet. They have gone to podcasting. They've gone to satellite radio. And that's really where we have to look at as a foundation in the future. This enables us to be a network in many of the ways that we've simply been a conglomeration of five stations and now 110 affiliates in the future. And by the way, if we enter into these agreements, that means that we can also distribute affiliate programming, assuming the affiliates likewise agree to do this. Obviously, once we have completed this discussion about this particular agreement, we have to look at assembling specifications and estimates to decide how we're going to build an infrastructure that does that. We want to be able to look at funders, you know, like the Ford Foundation, like the Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, which are distributing the payola money from the Sony BMG agreement that's going on. We want to look at people like the Open Society Institute. We want to look at a number of foundations that are out there that have an interest in civic media, which is an area that we haven't penetrated, that not many people are broadcasting, because there we're not simply a collection of proprietary stations. We're now a network. We're a foundation that represents all of these individual voices down to the producer level, not just the station level.
Rob, can I interject a couple of quick things?
Sure. I'm just about to quit.
Go ahead.
Some of the station issues that we think we know have to be resolved quickly. We have to make clear the issue of revenue sharing so that everyone knows that the revenues that are generated nationally, for example, are going to be shared among all of the participants. We also understand that there are issues about attribution at the station level and for producers that need to be included. It's true that in order to, for example, stream things, there may have to be some post-production of metadata. For example, if we're going to create something similar to the audio port to distribute data from the local stations. So we know that those are issues, but we think that we're prepared to begin discussing them now with our technical staff. And that's okay. It for now.
I want to raise two more points. One is that obviously we cannot distribute all, or possibly right now even most of our content under these things, even if we worked out all the details tomorrow. So there's always going to be a component of distribution that's going to contain copyrighted material. That's point one. Point two, there are still significant challenges, the most significant of which is how do you ensure that something doesn't contain copyrighted material, even if somebody tells you it doesn't? And what's your liability if you distribute it under these terms if they were wrong? That's a big one that still needs to be solved. There are solutions, but it's not trivial. Also, managers have raised points such as how do they prevent this kind of licensing from undercutting their own ability to develop audiences on the stations? And that's a very legitimate point as well. There was one concern raised, Sasha raised it, is how do I be sure that some programmer is not going to go somewhere else and distribute their show in our own signal area where it might air before it airs here? There's one final point, which is this issue of getting these licenses from particularly unpaid producers and what it allows us to do. There is a perception around the network that the current state of things is that the station already owns the content. And I asked John Krigler, because that statement has been attributed to him in the various forms I've heard it, and he says, no, that's not what I was saying. We have a right to distribute that content. And one of the things, one of the issues is that if a producer posts a program of their making on their own website, and it includes copyrighted material, they are no longer covered by the licenses that we're covered by that allow distribution of that copyrighted content, and Pacifica could conceivably be liable under those circumstances if it did not have a policy on that point. So the point is that you can't claim, you may not be able, in fact you probably can't claim that the product of an unpaid producer is work for hire and that you own it. In the long run, whatever we decide to do in terms of how we license content, it is now becoming clear that we need a licensing strategy and clear ways of implementing it around the network, no matter what. Whether this board and management decides, you know, we hate the whole Creative Commons idea, we don't even want to go there, we still need it. And John has made the point for a long time that we don't have any consistent way of securing rights to the stuff we're using for the other forms of distribution that we're getting into. And it's something we really do need to do. Greg wants to talk, and I need to shut up. I'm going to show you this after describes that.
I think that this has been a very comprehensive presentation. Just a couple of points. One is that on the issue of the ownership, I had suggested back at the beginning of this process that we basically establish as a basic principle the ownership of this, of the work by the producers. Now, that's not true at all community radio stations. I've been checking around the country, and for example, the station that Nathan worked at before, WORT, in their handbook, when you come to work there as a volunteer producer, you sign this basic handbook, you know, when you enter the system, and in doing so, you are actually surrendering your rights to any program you produce, and other stations have other methods of doing that. We decided not to go that way. I think it's a good decision on principle, but just to understand, we never went down that road, and so that puts us in a different ballpark to begin with, and I think it establishes that we are, you know, sort of saying now, clearing up an ambiguity that's been presented to us repeatedly by counsel over the years, and that's sort of a good in and of itself. The other point has to do with, just to sort of fill out the spectrum of issues that we're having to deal with, is the whole issue of the releases. This goes to what rights do you really have to the material. And, they're one of the many concerns, management concerns, is, you know, how do you consistently get talent releases, not for music only, although that's an issue, but also for interviews that you may broadcast at one time, and then you archive, and then you may 2, 3, 10 years later want to, you know, use and distribute again, or distribute on an ongoing basis. And right now the archive has considerable problems with that, and I actually inquired when I was in New Orleans about how some of the ways in which this could be streamlined because of the problem of getting these releases, particularly when interviews are not being done in studio. Some stations have, you know, in-studio talent release forms, and some stations they're now being developed or modified. Two other strategies are, you can, on any kind of tape that you're recording on an interview with someone on, for future broadcasts, if it's not a live interview, you can simply tape a very simple form of release. And the mere taping of that and the assent to that by the person who is being recorded is sufficient to establish the rights. Or you can email someone, you know, a release, and they can fax it back to you. And that's, so there are actually mechanisms that can streamline this process, and that's also something that will have to be resolved. All of these things have an impact on allocation of staff time, staffing in general. These are the concerns that are now arising at the management level as to how this kind of regime would be implemented. And that's, in a sense, the phase we are now entering into, where we actually just figure out what is going to be the impact on ongoing operations. And I think that's part of the work of the next 3 to 6 months, is to develop practices, procedures, assess what the actual structure changes in the structure might be, and who is really going to, you know, manage and monitor the process going forward. And I certainly totally endorse the basically the process that that Rob has outlined, the rationale that Dave has outlined. And one more thing, just to say, is that we are in the process right now of refining and completing a new proposal, a modified proposal that you will see in the near future that will deal with some of the implementation issues and make sure that we have an open process going forward.
Yeah, I'll just say at the last board meeting we passed a motion saying that I was to draft with Greg a request for applications for people who might want to apply to do aspects of this project. My hope is that we can fund more than one, and that's nearly ready. I can actually email that out to people tonight. I want to quickly show you a couple of things. So this is what I was referring to. This is the Participatory Culture Foundation at participatoryculture.org. These are the different software tools they've built. And I just want to point out the sophistication of these tools is something that this one in particular. Where is it? Hold on a second. There's a point. Oh, bother. It's not on this page. I had to switch. They will make you a customized version of the channel guide and of the software that you can use for your purposes. So these software tools that they're building for organizations that are content producers, they will make, I believe, free of charge, versions of the software that lets you create channel guides for what you're doing. So you don't have to build all the infrastructure yourself. Is this in focus?
The resolution is poor.
Yeah, the resolution is poor.
Okay,
I think it's my eyes. So.
Can you read it?
Where's the screen?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think this isn't gonna work in the time we have available. I wanted
Dave. Could you just say what it is? What site? What?
It is the participatoryculture.org, and I was trying to get, here we go. Custom development. We have begun offering a service for business and organizations that would like to have customized versions of Democracy Player, including a custom channel guide, your own set of default channels, and even an alternate icon for your player. Now, I want to show their staff. This is just a group of people who have an online platform for doing open source video, and they have a staff that's equivalent to the paid staff at KPFT. This is them. And like KPFT, they also have some youth involved down here. So, again, I just want to emphasize the value of being a part of this larger movement and finding partnerships that bring in additional resources. And again, emphasize that it's really wholly dependent on the management's interest and willingness in moving forward in these areas in the near term as to whether or not we're going to be able to see something bear fruit in this area. And with that, I don't know if Ambrose, you wanted to talk a little bit about the community production aspect of this, and then I'd be very interested to hear from some of the managers their feelings about these issues.
What we've been talking about for several meetings now is that simply implementing what our Constitution bylaws require. For example, it says in radio broadcasting to encourage and provide outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community, to offer performance facilities to amateur instrumentalists, choral groups, orchestral groups, and music students, and to promote and aid other creative activities which will serve the cultural welfare of the community. It seems to me very clear that we could make a tremendous impact on this country if in every one of our five station areas we encouraged and enabled orchestral groups, soloists, jazz bands, quartets. How about music that is right now very popular? but without the kind of negative impact of the words of like holes and all that stuff. All we have to do is ask the young people to create, and we offer the performance facilities and the performance stimulation of the community so the community can come out and hear them. We can help them get their music and their rap and their other music copyrighted. And we could broadcast that throughout our five major areas in this country. We could turn around the impact of music and we could present the world a different set of creative, talented young people. And I don't see why we can't do that. It goes from a soloist to a choir. And I was stimulated to do this because every year in the state of Maryland, all the jazz, high school jazz bands come together in a huge performance in Baltimore. And I was just thinking, why aren't we doing that for all of our communities? A lot of our communities don't even offer music in the high schools. And so here's an opportunity for us to impact, as it says, the cultural welfare of the community. And if we just undertook to do that in every one of our five station areas, we could have a tremendous impact. Not only that, always look for the future. If you do that for young people, their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents will never forget you for doing it. You will always have support, and you'll have a broadened support because all of those parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and all the family members will never forget that you allowed their child to get that kind of positive exposure. And so it seems to me it's a no-brainer. It's a win-win situation no matter how you look at it. And the question is, I'm glad to see all the program people yesterday report. I'd like to see them tackle this throughout the five station areas. And let's do it and increase it every year. I've gone to things in the state of Maryland that you know where third, fourth, and fifth graders give performances using violins and violas and mostly string instruments. And I'm saying, what in the world are we doing in our major cities where some idiots have decided music is not important? Music is so important to our mental well-being. And I don't see why we can't do it. And we can do it in such a way where every participant gets from us proof that they participated. You know, people will treasure those things. And they'll keep them in their rooms, and they'll never forget being able to perform either individually or as a group, just a simple member of a band. And I don't see why we can't do it. And I'd like to see the program people begin to develop that in a very serious way.
Okay, so that brings us to the next question. Yeah, I'm going to now pose the question specifically to you guys. I've been asking some of the PDs and GMs, you know, what are the barriers in terms of production facilities? Different stations have different levels of capacity. What are the barriers? What is the desire? What is your interest? What resources would be needed? And what is your plan for working either within the station development directors, with the board, and other entities to help develop proposals that we could go get funded? So I'm interested.
Okay, well, I think this is a... Ooh, this is loud. All right, I'll stand back a little. I think this is a really exciting opportunity for us and one that's overdue. Coming up with guidelines, with We've been needing guidelines for a lot of different things, but this is kind of going beyond that, expanding beyond that, to really consider how we can use this multi-platforms, the web is just one component, to really transform how we're getting our information out to people and how radio is done by Pacifica. So I just want to applaud everyone for working on this. I've sat in on a couple of the task force calls. There are some things that I'm looking forward to. There's some details which still seem to be kind of open questions that need to be worked out, and I look forward to having a chance to talk to Greg about those things. But in terms of our interest as a station for something like this, it's huge. And we are in the process of assessing our programming, and I've been in this position for 4 months. So what we're currently doing is looking at things in terms of our terrestrial programming, and then beyond that, we'll move on to looking at web programming and how to do that, because currently it's a mirror of what's on
right.
the air. And I think the stations that have been particularly successful with their broadcasts have shown that it's unique content on the website that isn't necessarily the stuff on the air, or maybe the best of the stuff on the air. I think one thing that we should really make sure, though, is that we don't think of these web streams as a way of taking stuff that hasn't really worked so well on a terrestrial signal and kind of putting it out to pasture on the website. We really need to be thinking about connecting with new audiences, and so there are a lot of concerns there. So for us, where we're at is the point of assessment and trying to think about these things. Capacity is a real question. Production is a real question.
Do you think within a few months you could have a couple of concrete pilot project proposals that we could then go look for funding for? And in the case of KPFA specifically, I spoke to, I forget her name, the woman, one of the women involved with the apprenticeship program, and you guys have a unique resource in that you have literally generations of people who have had extensive training. Who might be very much involved in going out into the community and sharing their skills to create production with the kind of production values that they were trained in. And I'm wondering whether, you know, if we said, hey, there's a cadre of people who have already been trained who right now don't have a broadcast outlet, and we could provide one here, and this is what the outcome would be at the end of that period. Is there any possibilities doing that?
That certainly would be something to consider. I mean, we really need to be thinking as a station and as a network, and I think they're separate, they're kind of parallel processes, but they're also separate, about how we're going to use our websites. I mean, I'm very excited at the prospect of Pacifica.org being this platform for a huge amount of content that can come from all over the network. And then there are the questions of how our local listeners and getting beyond our local listeners. I mean, we already have people listening all over the world to right. us, and it's very exciting, actually. If you ever stop by KPFA, you can see we have a wonderful web director, Michael Manicheri, who has set up this map of the world, and you can see pinpoints on the map of IP addresses. And we have people listening in Senegal, we have people listening in the Philippines, we have people listening in Iceland, all over the world. So thinking, too, about how people are listening to us means, while, as Ambrose said, we were founded on a mission about giving expression, an outlet to the expression of our listening community, that's changing on the web. So thinking about that is conceptualizing how we are reaching the people who are listening to us via the web is, I think, going to take a shift, and we really need to think about that. I wanted to just invite everyone, if you haven't already, to check out kpfa.org, because it's something we're really proud of. We have currently, and this is where we stand right now, and we're moving beyond that, we're going to launch a new version of our website at the end of the month. We have, while already our website is accessible to disabled people, we're trying to streamline it and make it particularly accessible, which I think should be a priority for all of us when we think about the web. We also have one of the largest archives of audio on the site for a station of our size, anywhere, NPR, whatever. We have 18,000 files on our website. Massive downloads. I don't have the numbers with me. I was trying to get them from our web guy, but we have a lot of stuff going on. We're also, right now, we've applied for a grant. While iPods are certainly one way for people to listen to downloads from the web, the iPods are going to be outstripped by cell phones, and because it's going to be much easier for people to listen via cell phone, and plus cell phones are much more common. And so we right now have put in for a grant for converting our files into a file that is compatible with cell phones. And actually our proposal is for funding to do this and to have a model which is open source, which we can then give to other Pacifica stations and community radio stations so they can replicate it if they want it. Check out our website if you get a chance. And the other thing just I want to end with is I do think we should be a leader in the fight against the royalty hike, because although I think it's really important that we come up with pod-safe music, things that are that we have permission to use, that's not going to just be a solution by itself, I don't think. You know, there's so much music out there that's copyrighted. I was thinking Miriam Makeba, Bob Marley. Do we not want to be able to broadcast this stuff on our air ever again? So we need to be, I think, leading the fight about why should non-commercial broadcasters be hit with the same treatment as commercial broadcasters. And so KPFA has already, we're trying to actually launch a campaign, and we really invite the rest of Pacifica to join us in this, educating our audience about what's going on. We're running carts on the air telling people that this is happening, that it could put internet broadcasters out of business, that if they're concerned, they should take action. And we put a statement on our website, and I think it would be really wonderful if Pacifica could band together on this stuff so we can take a stand on this as well.
So before you end, just on the question of in the next 3 months, do you think you could develop pilot project proposals that incorporate use of Creative Commons hybrid licensing that we could then go get funding to fund?
I think that's a great idea. I don't know if that's actually possible because, as I said, in terms of just my capacity coming in at this point, and we're in the process of really trying to craft a vision of where the station is going, that needs to be part of it. It would be wonderful. I'd like to try something like that. I'm just saying I'm not sure if I can connect.
And in terms of using the web platform for the kind of things that Ambrose is talking about, getting new production going on in the outside community, are there any current plans? Do you think you could develop some proposals by the next quarterly meeting?
Well, I think that involves a larger conversation about exactly how we're going to use the web. And definitely studio capacity, all of those issues is one part of it, but it's also the vision of what we're doing and how we're going to do it. So I think we need to figure that part out first and then move ahead with our plans.
Could we get from you by the next quarterly meeting a sketch out of where you are and your thinking about that and your planning around that?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does definitely. Anybody, do any of the other managers want to address that? And I know Greg also wanted to comment. No, thanks, Sasha. Chairman. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
This is for Sasha. In working with Michael, there's been there's an issue that was raised about, this is an aside, but in terms of website and accessibility, there was this issue raised about having access to financial documents and the ease. And can you just give us the update on KPFA and what we're doing there? Thanks.
Set for Nathan. Okay. Tall, not that tall. In terms of financial documents on the web, we have, if you go to kpfa.org/financials, you'll find our most current documents, financial records. And if there's anything that you think should be there that isn't, let me know. But I think it's up there. Our business manager put that information there.
Whose hand is that? Is that Evelyn's?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Evelyn's last hand.
The lighting is not high enough.
I'm just teasing. Don't dive off the bridge. I was just joking.
I know how to swim.
I wanted to just touch on a couple of things that one that tie into what Ambrose was talking about in terms of our youth development. There are just so many ways of collaborating with programs that are already in existence, because we talk about capacity and our ability to do these things on our own. Our development folk maybe want to get together from the various stations like the general managers and the PDs are doing and start to talk about what the other stations are doing in terms of grant writing, because everybody's not grant writing in the network. Some folks are good at it, some are not doing anything. And there needs to really be, we kind of need to pick up the pace here, because for, you know, for 2 years now we've been talking about the grants that are coming out of one station, and the rest of us are trying to play catch up. Somehow our development folks need to kind of collaborate and also decide on how to build some collaboration with groups in the communities they serve that are already doing things that don't have access to media, that are maybe looking to partner with someone and develop a grant, and they may have the resources to do it that we don't have. That's just a suggestion, because we keep saying we're going to think about, and while we're thinking, time is marching on. And we are, like, really behind in some of these areas. And my suggestion is that we stop thinking about it and kind of put an action step in there for some collaboration between the development groups of all of our stations, maybe a conference call, where we really start to look at how we can pull together some of the resources that are across the network so that the entire network kind of develops together instead of one piece developing very fast and the others are kind of lagging behind. Because together we have a great deal of resources that are not really utilized across the board. And a conference call could maybe facilitate making some of that happen. It doesn't mean you have to get on a plane. We just have to pay a phone bill, you know, to really start to develop some grant writing and some collaboration in the communities to get some of these programs done. Because a lot of our, in Houston, the jazz folks, they're huge youth jazz bands that are doing wonderful things, but nobody knows about them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we could help promote some of that. They would love that. You know, the mayor's office does a little thing once a year. Those kids need exposure all the time. They're doing phenomenal kinds of things.
It's amazing.
From kindergarten up through high school. And nobody knows. So maybe that's something that we could do as a part of our educational process and our arts development. But maybe we need to talk more and across the network, not just in our own little pods. Okay? That's just a suggestion.
Nathan.
I was actually just going to summarize some of what the GMs and PDs talked about yesterday morning before we came over to the meeting for the programming discussion. There was a great deal of excitement about what could be done with web development, talking about bringing in new local voices, partnering with new community organizations, all the great things that people have thought of and will continue to think of. The management, and actually, let me just add, personally, I also kind of sit on this cusp of generations, you know, between, you know, listening to radio in the old terrestrial format and also really listening to mostly web-based radio these days. I kind of have come to prefer the latter in some ways. But that said, the general managers and program directors did have several common concerns that I think as a group would like to have addressed. Among them were staffing issues. If we've got a couple hundred more people doing web programming, web content development, you know, who makes sure it all comes off all right? You know, it's just a workload issue. Another is studio space issues, like you've added to, and I think from my visits to stations, a number of the stations are already kind of pushing it. If we could have it really decentralized and have home studios and stuff, that might be more possible. Also, some discussion with council would be very much appreciated, I think, from the management, including liability issues. What are we liable for that someone posts to the website, to our great gleaming new audio repository, that we didn't actually, you know, sort of have any say over? You know, is it something that we can, I mean, with the liability issues, I'll just leave it at that, including copyright. Tied in with sort of who monitors the liability and copyright issues is really quality control. I mean, there's bound to be some programs that go up that can be objectionable if it's really open and anybody can post anything. How do we know? And I think we do want to have a great field of audio going up in sort of the civic journalism mode, as well as interviews, as well as music. Our job, I think, is to sort of sort out and find the best. Or that could be our job. But who does it? How do we do it? How does it all get sort of taken care of without a whole lot more staff? And grants are wonderful to get things started, but, you know, grants for sustaining something like this would be difficult. And I think it could actually be feasible down the road in terms of the money. I mean, there's certainly a lot of websites out there that have done enormously good work, but these are some questions that staff have had. Also, in terms of the specific licensing and distribution agreement, some folks expressed concern about not using the airwaves to sell programs. That notion of having a share of revenue from programs go back to the programmers, or the programmers themselves possibly using airwaves to promote their own shows for sale. And I only point to the programming policy, which was approved pretty recently, that talks about, I've forgotten the exact wording, but programming that inures to the benefit of any one member of the foundation is antithetical to the mission, was the phrase, I think. And so that's just another concern that was expressed yesterday morning.
Chandra, Michael, and then Bob. Chandra, Michael, and then Bob.
Okay. You know, Nathan brings up some really good points, and I would just like to build on what he said. And my comment is that in growing new audiences through our websites, I don't think we take advantage of recruiting them as potential donors as much as we could. For example, what if we asked people to register email addresses when they visited our website? We can say it's optional. We can decide how to do that. We can set a policy on it. I think we should explore that. And then if we want to do donor solicitation campaigns through email, we can do it. I mean, it's a great way to compile new... Okay. Are all the stations doing it, or is just... Okay. Is A the only one?
He does.
I can't hear anybody.
I think KPFK does.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, thanks.
Michael?
Yeah, we don't like that. Get it out to the public, you know. No, anyway, that's fine.
No registration.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, this is sort of what I was asking for yesterday, And I wonder if licensing and distribution isn't this discussion isn't a little where we've gone is a little off where we've gone is not a little off agenda. In any event, I'd like to say that Greg gave us a metaphor in Houston that I want to borrow, and that has to do with the Pacifica is like a university, and I thought it was really telling, and maybe people have heard it, but that makes the five stations kind of like colleges. And and that makes sense to me as I'm trying to figure out, as on the tech committee, what we might do with the structure. And you might think about that metaphor because it facilitates the culture of autonomy among the different stations. But mostly, I would like to advocate for the little person, and I would like to. Really make the deans or the program directors, I don't want to do the comparison too much because we'll get into the dysfunction of what it is to be in public education. The chancellor.
We call it feudalism.
In any event, I know the KPFA has a lot of stations, and KPFT in its own way has band-aided together workstations for the public, and I'd really encourage us to pursue this train of thought. I think Dave's line of thinking is in virtual programming, in that we want to bring people. And we don't know how. We don't know how this is going to happen. How the kids will use all the content that we're going to make available to them for free. You see what I'm saying? And that you give people a computer and you say you sit down and do some programming and share it the way you share it on cell phones or by computer or whatever. So I really want to emphasize the production aspect of this, and our duty as Pacificans to educate programmers. Anyway, I know there's a lot more than that, but that would be my voice, and I would invite comments. Thank you.
Well, a few points. Pete Caracas, technology director, made a presentation to the staff at WBAI last week about a new piece of software that he's played a big role in refining that will allow any of the five stations that want to participate, and I think he said so far it looks like about three of them will, and maybe eventually all five, to have kind of an overarching program guide that will include the content of, will include the text describing every show that can be searchable by keywords. And this can be linked to the audio files as well, if I understand it correctly. This will be a tremendous boon to this whole process we're describing today, because it will allow... It's not enough to simply have on a website, you know, this show was aired on this date, or even list the topic, but to have it searchable, you know, by all the major search engines, so when people want to understand a certain topic or a certain type of music, that they just type in one word and, you know, KPFT June 17th comes up and they listen to the show and they see what it was about. So I just wanted to share that. I'm sure Pete will be telling us more about that later, but that's a very important piece of this puzzle that is now in place, or about to be in place, I think he said, within the next few weeks that'll be launched. That's one thing. The concern that the GMs and PDs raised, that Nathan voiced about physical space, is real and is a serious concern as we try to build outward to the communities, and particularly to reach disenfranchised communities. And maybe Eva can talk about some of the experiments that KPFK has done in this, which I think we can learn from about, and are very fundable by grants to get subsidies to create satellite studios in poor communities where people can be trained in doing their own recording work and their own editing and broadcasting, so that we don't need to worry about the overcrowded stations that I would say all five of them probably are already, but that we can actually kind of have a win-win situation where we expand what we offer, and we also give many more opportunities for communities to have self-expression. And then the final thing, I just wanted to give a general comment about the process of the task force that's been going on since December, which, this whole initiative is extremely exciting and is absolutely essential for the survival of the Pacifica Foundation. I think we all know that. We all know that, you know, the technology is expanding so rapidly, and that particularly among younger people, that if we're not on this train, it's going to leave the station without us and leave us in the dust. So that's real clear. But what I wanted to comment on is the process of the task force. This, to me, has been, in my, you know, like 6 or 7 years involved in Pacifica issues, has been one of the most constructive and positive collaborative processes that I have seen. And I think the key is that all the key players are at the table. We have local staff, we have local management, not every single person, but people who speak on behalf of a lot that aren't, of others who are not on each call. Local unpaid staff, local management, national paid staff that play key roles, including technical people, national management, the attorney, and listener representatives on the board from different cities. We have different geographic representation. And I just would advise you, and I think the tone of almost every meeting has been very respectful and very open to listening and learning and changing people's minds over time. And we're dealing with some very complex issues, both legally and policy-wise and practically. And we haven't solved them all yet, and we're still going to have some, you know, problems and disagreements. But I would just recommend this model for the future policymaking in Pacifica, that we create special task forces on complex issues and you know, and including controversial policies, where we invite everyone to be at the table by conference calls. And I think we're going to get a lot more done, and it'll be a lot more constructive and a lot less feeling of people being left out and having their views just excluded or overridden, because they'll be there at the creation.
Lydia.
Yes, I have three things to say. One is, I would like to see, in terms of communicating this project to staff and all of the stakeholders, that when you and Robin, the task force and whoever, if you can come up with examples, it's just like with our attorneys, when they give specific examples of certain things, it's a lot more palatable. So that, for example, you could say, okay, this is not like indie media because, or it is like indie, you know, with things that we know about in terms of media and so forth. I would reference particularly as we go into the next stage of discussing this with the LSBs. Dave, you had interviewed Javier Elorriaga, you'll remember, with Zapatismo, which was fundamental to what we were trying to communicate conceptually. But in the concrete, Dave, you've spoken, you have proposed pilot programs, which is like the tangible thing. Like, what would it take at this meeting to get commitments from managers in terms of a time frame of producing, you know, 2, 3, 4, or 5 programs within the next 6 months or whatever time frame is reasonable? So that's like a question that I'm just putting out there for consideration, so that we go out of here with something that's a little bit more tangible. Some of this still seems to be very cerebral in terms of the concept, and I personally think that there are aspects of this that we can start moving on.
Anybody else? Sorry.
The only question that I have is that we, at the KPFA radio station, we have a website that lists all our programs, and they're broadcast, and they're archived, and they're available for distribution to line with the audio port on the main website on Pacifica Radio. I still have not heard how the current content and the audio port, the ports are being used. How much is the traffic on it? Who is getting it? Who is distributing it? Who is listening to it on each radio station? Before we go any further, I think it's a good idea to take inventory of what's really going on, our own websites, and that data has to be provided somehow, and I have not seen it. And I was hoping that somebody is looking at that and give us that information, because in the absence of that, I am not simply convinced when somebody says, well, a train is leaving and we're late. Well, maybe it's better to leave the damn train because it might be going the wrong direction. So I want to know, first of all, where we are, how our content is being used, how it's being listened to, who is listening to it, and that data, I think, it should be available and should be provided to the board.
I can speak to audioport.org briefly, and that's that it's primarily a site for distribution of audio to affiliates and sister stations and from independent producers, affiliates and sister stations. We have the data on how many people download a show, and you know, it varies from 2 to several hundred. But it's few of those programs are actually public. It's more of an internal Pacifica network kind of tool, if you will. We also don't actually keep logs of who's downloading it. That was a decision that was made in the construction of audioport.org. So I couldn't actually tell you the geographic location, much less the station, of where all those downloads went to. But that's
okay,
the
but
current model.
Each of our radio stations does have the archives that the people can listen to. Mm-hmm. And it's not strictly for our 5 stations or our affiliate stations. It's for all public to listen to it.
Sure, I see.
And so that data we also have to be made available. Because so that we know who is listening
audio
to our program.
There are some programs on audio port that are publicly available.
I'm not talking about the audio port. I'm talking about, let's
station.
Say, a KPFA radio station. We have the archives. All the programs are listed there. They're archived there. And who's listening to it? Can they download? Can people listen to it? And each station, hopefully they're streaming it and they're archiving it. And so that data has to be known. So that we, before we proceed any further, where are we? Are people listening to our programs? Or what's going on with them?
Okay, well, I think anyway, we're about at time.
I think stations can provide that pretty easily.
Eva and then Greg.
Hi, thank you. So, on the question of web statistics, we give a web statistical report to our local board every month, and it shows how many people are listening, our streams, who's downloading, which countries people are downloading from. So, I'm pretty sure all the stations does it. And so maybe that can...
No.
I'm sorry.
Well,
if people don't have the software to do the reporting, because I thought at some point we all did, it is something that we could definitely help other stations with. I want to talk about a couple of things. On the issue of training, we did a training project last year that actually just ended in the last couple of weeks. And it involved... students from 10 different high schools, and then we had 3 different grassroots community groups that were involved with it who made their facilities available. And so what I'm thinking, we all out of space, whether it's on the air or whether it's physical space. And so one of the things to do with getting these program launched and produced for web content only is to be able to continue those relationships where we do provide training in community facilities, in collaboration with high schools, with community television stations, etc. Those facilities are there. There's media departments at colleges, etc. And if we build the relationships, because part of the concern is, are we just putting content on? What about the quality of the content? Because we want to produce good radio or good content. So in order for us to do that, we would have to make training available. And the other thing, Dave, that I was thinking about is if we have editing software on the website and create tutorials with it, then, you know, young people are very savvy, nothing against the older people, but it's easy for somebody to learn editing software within an hour. And if we have the software available for free, because you could make it available for free, on the website, and people can train online as to how to produce a show. So then we can, in a way, almost at least we're facilitating editing and quality of programming, etc. So that's one thing, because I'm not thinking that we're bringing this into the station. I'm thinking that this is a web platform that we are producing programming for. So that's some of the things on the immediate stuff of pilot programs. KPFK is pretty much ready to go. We do multiple streams and we have available everything that we need. But basically, I think most of the stations are struggling with bandwidth already, or lack of bandwidth. And this is another issue that we've talked about for several years with Pacifica, where it would be in the interest of Pacifica to have a national contract for bandwidth. I don't understand why we're all paying for bandwidth separately. So that's one thing that would help all the stations if there's KPFK pretty much has a contract that is unlimited bandwidth.
Can I just say, you're aware that Democracy Now! Gets all its bandwidth free from archive.org because it makes it available?
Yeah. So I mean that's
Democracy Now! Gets all its bandwidth for free. They don't pay anything because they host it at archive.org, which is willing to host content that's made freely available.
So that's definitely something we need to look in as a network. On pilot programs, now the issue, I think the concern for me now as a GM is the issue of copyrighted music. And so if we are now, we say, okay, we're ready to do this, we can launch a pilot program within a month, 2 months, 3 months from now, then we're talking about part-safe music. So I wanted to ask you if you have an idea of how long it would take us to put up a library like that, because that is an extensive amount of work.
You could be doing it by the end of the week. You have people sign the license, and you just start posting the music on a section of your site that says this is CC licensed. You'd do it by the end of the week. If people wanted to, this could be happening now.
Okay, so you're going to help us do it by the end of the week.
If you want, yeah.
So, I think we should try a pilot and see how it goes. Because now my major concern is the copyright issue, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we can work on that. Ambrose, on your question of music, I've been talking to our music programmers. So what we're going to start doing in the summer is to start hosting, have programmers host live music shows. We're going to start with once a month, and then hopefully build it up so that you can do it on a weekly basis. But it's a youth initiative, and so whether it's a house party, whether it's a club, and the idea is then to record that, to produce it into premiums, and have recognition of unknown young talent that is have an opportunity to have their music heard. So that is one of the things that we're doing. In the last couple of months, KPFK has probably had live performances every day in studio, and it's been pretty impressive. One of the things we're doing on the web is we started archiving that music on the web, and so now we're going back to the artists and the performers to ask if we can have the right to use that as premiums. But the intention has always been for us, and we're at that point now, 5 years later, that we can work on producing music and creating CDs and DVDs for KPFK. One of the things I've started doing was we started negotiations with independent producers, and actually this idea came from Sonali. We have so much work, and everybody is just in overload. To go to independent producers, whether audio or filmmakers, and to have them on a continuous basis produce premiums in between fund drives for the upcoming fund drive. So we've signed a couple of independent producers. And also during fund drive, we don't have, you can only play, a few minutes of a really good film or documentary, and people get upset because they don't hear it for the rest of the year. So I've been speaking to people like Robert Greenwald that is willing to come on board and make their content available throughout the year. And this is some of the stuff that we can also have available for web content to just kickstart of it. Content is easy to come by. There's a lot of independent producers that have content available. As I said, it's a matter of bandwidth. It's a matter of making sure that the copyright issues are dealt with. And really, it would be good to see like a timeline as to how we do this and deal with the issues, the concerns that we brought up. Because again, the issue of programmers, if I've been on the station for 20, 30 years, I now hear that if you have web content, you can actually sell the web content, but I can't sell my program that I've produced for 20 years. So that's a conflict that we need to deal with. I think that's kind of my comments that I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg.
Yeah. I know everybody wants to eat. I'll try to wrap it up briefly. I mean, I think we all know, and I hope we know, that we're talking about really a fundamental shift right now in the way we're delivering audio and content generally, and also our conception of formats and so forth. And this is also, I think it bears repeating, a generational shift driven to some extent by that, because we're moving into an on-demand, multi-platform, multimedia future that really, in some sense, was not really anticipated fully when Pacifica began. And so that's part of what we're struggling with, is to reconceptualize how we fit into this new digital internet driven world. On the process point, I just want to endorse Bob's comments about the process, and also just point out that it also has to do not only with the participation model and the way that discussions were conducted, but also the leadership that Rob, delicate and yet very persistent in facilitating this process over the last 5 months. And so I just want to, this was not an inconsiderable task, and I think that his presentation today demonstrates very clearly the grasp and the ability to project what this is about. Obviously, the stations have major issues to contend with. They are the major producers, not they, but the producers within the stations, and to some extent the station staff as well. And this is going to raise some very critical questions about the structure of stations, the staffing of stations, and the whole issue of to what extent are we competing with ourselves. Well, yeah, in a way, yes, but no. We are actually building out where there's somebody said, and we are generating new audience And if we don't compete with ourselves, someone else is going to compete with us anyway. There are also, however, national implications not talked about as much in this discussion today, but obviously they have to be considered. This also reflects an emerging understanding, I think, of ourselves as a global network. And we're talking national, but the internet is not national. The internet is global. And we are going to become increasingly aware of that. This has implications for national staff and infrastructure, the expansion of audio port, the bandwidth issue that was discussed, and obviously there may be some costs involved, but if we do this in relationship to bandwidth, for example, we may also be able to get this without cost or for very little cost. It affects the archives in terms of what material is archived, and we have a specific, idea of where we want to start with the archives with this 1968 project that's linked into our building out of new Creative Commons approach, and also in terms of creating an independent music library, which has incredible implications in relationship to the royalty struggles that we're dealing with now. And also it begins to continues the process of branding Pacifica. I hate to use that word, but it is a fact of life that though we may have an agenda which transcends a post-industrial capitalist economy, we are currently embedded within it and struggling against it. And because of that, we have to also consider the need to project ourselves, to market ourselves. And this will help us do that. This, I think, moves us toward a resource and education model of what Pacifica and its stations are about. Michael mentioned the university analogy. You can take that too far. But essentially, Pacifica as an educational media foundation and what that really means. And this will allow us in many ways to really begin again to fulfill that mission. And it also, because of the nature of what this type of distribution is, has the potential to put tremendous power in the hands of individual listeners who can reorganize, reaggregate content in new ways and on this new platform. And I just want to sort of wrap this up by just urging you, at the risk of issuing a call to action, that we despite the concerns that have been raised, that we don't fall into the trap of demanding that every single question that anyone can think up has to be resolved before we make a fundamental decision. In fact, I think we've made that fundamental decision, actually, to move down this road. And now what we're doing is we're discussing specifically what the process and what the steps and what the resource allocation decisions are going to be in order to get us there. And just saying that, timing is essential in many things. And right now, for this transformation, with the need for collaboration considered fully, the time is now to do this. We're already, in a sense, a little bit lagging behind. But we can catch up, and we can establish a leadership role if we move on this now while taking into account all of the concerns that have been raised and working now through a continuation of the collaborative model that was discussed yesterday and apply it to this as well.
Yeah. Ambrose?
Very good. I think in much simpler terms, for example, it would seem to me that there are youth choirs in all of our cities. And if we had a quarterly, if we talked to the clergy and the leadership of the churches and other entities that have choirs, I'm sure they would buy into the concept of quarterly exposition of their choirs in competition with other choirs. I mean, it's not very difficult. I mean, I tape my shows on WFW, and we convert those to CDs, and during the premium drive, we sell those. We could do the same thing with the recording of these performances. And then if it got really exciting, let me tell you what it means. It means that each one of those choir members and the entity is going to buy some of those CDs. And they'll be listening to them. They'll be sharing them with relatives and friends. That expands us, because you're saying that KPFK or WPFW is producing this and sponsoring this. I'll tell you what else we could do. I remember when we went to New York, there was a young fellow there who was a hip-hop artist that produced some beautiful hip-hop, non-negative hip-hop. We could create a competition throughout our five areas urging these young people to produce this kind of hip-hop material. And we would have them perform. And we would record the performances. I mean, to me, it's very simple. Using what we already have. We don't have to invent anything new, except if we want to extend it beyond what we're talking about. We could put that on the Internet and offer it on the Internet. I just think we ought to think in terms of simple to-do stuff. You'd be amazed, I believe, at the entities that are producing these choirs, how they would love to have exposure, and how their families would love to have that exposure. And all these choirs have soloists. You understand? And what you do is record the choir, you record the soloists, all during the performance. You could do it on a quarterly basis and look. What do you think your listeners would feel if on a quarterly basis you presented the talent of the community? I mean, to me it's very simple. And I hope that you don't get too involved in all this other stuff, that you don't do the simple thing. When Evelyn talked about the jazz groups,
I see it.
Down there, I know that a tremendous number of jazz groups throughout the Washington, D.C. area. And you can begin with all these high school grad jazz groups. There are jazz groups right there in the city of Washington. We all we have to do is pull them together and ask people, would you like to join us in presenting this local talent to the rest of the community? Because the community doesn't know about them.
Bobby, would you want to comment
that's what I'm
on that?
About.
I think we got to wrap up. Sean has asked for something. Lisa's asked for something. I have one concluding comment.
It's pretty quick. I think Ambrose's point. I'll just bend it. Ambrose's point is it is pretty simple. I agree. This Friday, we almost have an opportunity to prototype that. We're closing out Jazz and Poetry Appreciation Month with a jazz band, and we're inviting courts in to do it live. Hadn't thought about recording it. Recording it for future use. That's an excellent idea. And I think we just need to make sure that whatever we do is targeted to institutions that we collaborate. Absolutely. To avoid, some Star Search kind of bad radio thing. But as long as it's targeted, I think it is simple. Yeah. And we get a chance to prototype, and we'll assess what we do Friday from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right. Chandra had something quick, then Lisa.
Okay. We're talking about national and international impact of our programming and our websites. And, I think it's great that we're exploring all these opportunities, but I think we're forgetting one very particular component of the Pacifica Network, and that's the affiliates program. And bringing in the affiliate stations into the discussion is really, really a critical aspect, and we should not deny that. First of all, we get revenue from the affiliates programs, and secondly, they distribute our content as well, and they should be a partner in this discussion. We fought long and hard, some of us, to get Pacifica to recognize the affiliates program, to give it due respect, to hire affiliates coordinator, to make it an entity within the network, and it's becoming that at the NFCB. Pacifica had a great presence because of the affiliates coordinator in the affiliates program, who has helped Pacifica marketing the organization beyond just the affiliates program. and that recognition has to be given. And I think it's really important when we explore all these opportunities for what we're doing to bring them as a partner to the table.
Lisa.
I just want to just briefly echo Ambrose's sentiment, and because it's interesting you say that, because Bernard and I had even been talking about, you know, holding some kind of thing to open it up to the young artists. It's a tremendous way to tap the youth, a tremendous way to encourage people and the youth. We've been hearing a lot about the negative rap, which I think has got a bad rap, so to speak, but to really, you know, target that audience and to encourage and to promote those positive messages. And when you target the youth, you won't just be getting the youth, you'll be getting their parents, and you'll be making it very, very interactive that these people have an avenue to get some of this stuff heard where they can't walk into the other stations. And then just one other thing, because I heard the word marketing just briefly brought up, and there'll be a lot more conversations about this, but when we continue to talk about the Internet, we should also keep in mind that the Internet has the aspect, it's not like listening to radio. People a lot of times, even if they happen to listen to radio, but will go to the Internet, you know, with other things. So just that when we talk about these websites and the design and stuff like that, to also remember the aspect of not necessarily designing them for radio, but letting that be a product of it, but in terms of the marketing of them, in terms of marketing them for those who go there to read, those who are working, like I do sometimes, that's not being streamed, right, but who will go and visit certain sites and stuff like that people will tend to do. But there's a marketing approach that goes even beyond just the thing of downloading and listening to the radio to get them to go there, and that's a whole another thing that is really good.
Okay, I just want to close by saying a couple of things. One is I appreciate everything everybody said and the work that's gone in. And what I'm about to say, I don't mean to criticize anybody else's vision of this foundation. I have to speak about my own and my own reasons for having spent the last 11 years doing this. Just so you know, this is not a resignation, because I know enough to wait for 2 weeks before I act on an impulse. So I'm going to think about this for 2 weeks. But I feel like Nathan really set me free, and I want to thank you for it. Because the things you raised as objections, I understand them all, but they don't really relate to the Pacifica that got me involved for 11 years. It's been a real harm to my life to be involved with this foundation for that long, and I know I'm not unique in that. I know you've all sacrificed, so I claim no special privilege on that. But I did want to read something Lou Hill wrote. He said, "Unfortunately, it will not do to go halfway in the effort. Many have tried. The story of American radio, pardon me, is sprinkled with episodes in which some ambitious producer, momentarily out of touch with reality, has tried. These episodes remind me of someone's recent comment about purchasing a house under the Federal Housing Administration. This, he explains, is a system which makes it possible to convert an imaginary equity into a vested illusion." And I think there's a lot of that going on in the discourse I'm hearing. Discussions about how to convert imaginary equities into vested illusions. There are still in the industry many a frustrated idealist, many an embittered artist whose last efforts founded in the sales department, but who hopes someday to own a program. Since our first object is to avoid that chronic industrial frustration, we have to give a somewhat elementary interpretation to the idea of freedom in radio. The answer of the KPFA project on this point is not necessarily the only good answer, but it is explicit. It requires that the people who actually do the broadcasting should also be responsible for what and why they broadcast. In short, they must control the policy that determines their actions. He wrote which. That is more grammatically correct. If I may, I will emphasize that neither a public be damned nor a down with commerce attitude enters into this formulation. The problem was, you remember, not whether you as a listener should choose what you like or agree with, as obviously you should and do, but how to get some genuinely significant choices before you. Radio, which aims to do that, must express what its practitioners believe to be real, good, beautiful, and so forth, and what they believe is truly at stake in the assertion of such values. For better or worse, these are matters like the nature of the deity, which cannot be determined by a majority vote or a sales curve. Either some particular person makes up his mind about these things and learns to express them for himself, or we have no values or significant expression of them. Pardon me. Could you read this just last part?
Since values and expressions as fundamental as this are what we must have to improve radio noticeability, there is no choice but to begin by extending to someone the privilege of thinking and acting in ways important to him. Whatever else may happen, we thus assign to the participating individual the responsibility, artistic integrity, freedom of expression, and the like, which in conventional radio are normally denied him. KPFA is operated literally on this principle.
So there, it used to be Pacifica was the only place in media where that could happen, but it's really not true anymore. I came back to Pacifica after doing Creative Commons licensed sound recording because I felt it was important to have an institutional basis for that kind of media, and I hoped that Pacifica would see itself as serving a broader civic movement in media, because I don't think any individual broadcaster is going to beat corporate media back. I think in the software world, it's been shown no corporate entity, no matter how good they were, beat back Microsoft. They all got wiped out. What survived Microsoft and is now a challenge to it is the open source movement, a civic production and distribution model. So I hope that this institution would be interested in serving a civic production and distribution model. And I think everybody here is motivated by just and virtuous goals, and we differ in tactics and strategies and perception and values. But at least for me, I appreciate what you said, because I don't want to make anybody do anything they don't want to do. I'm willing to serve anybody's efforts to serve a broader media. And I don't know that this institution is the venue for that right now. So I'm probably going to take a leave of absence for a little while. It's time for public comment, and we're going to eat lunch while that goes on. Well, would anybody like to speak?
Well,
This was actually just a very brief reply. Another thing that was brought up yesterday in the summary that I didn't include in the summary, but that was brought up yesterday by GMs and PDs alike in our meeting yesterday was not that group is necessarily opposed to this at all, and I'd hate for these to be objections. They were just questions. They're just very practical considerations and questions, and I also share that I think there's a lot of potential for this, and I think the rest of the management thinks there's a lot of potential for this as well. Just simply things to think about as we go forward.
Yeah, and I look forward to serving efforts in those ways any way I can. Yes, Don.
Yeah, I'm a little disturbed to hear the chair's comments, and, you know, Dave, as a friend and a colleague from the KPFK signal area, you know, I don't think the final line is here. We haven't written the final chapter in this struggle. You know, we recently did a report to the listeners, and I consulted with you prior to that. So I looked at Radio for All, a project that we're a very important part of. So, while I'm sympathetic, because I know...
Radio for People, Radio for All.
I'm sorry, Radio for People. So I'm sympathetic with a certain level of frustration in the process, but I would encourage you not to make an assumption about what the final decision of this board is and what the final report from Rob and others is going to be. If you hear things that you think are slightly roadblock in nature and so on, keep in mind that this board is going to be considering every aspect, and I think there may be more of a shared vision than you think. So as a friend and as a colleague, I'm just going to encourage you not to jump to conclusions, because what you're hearing are the reflections of different sectors and individuals. And the board ultimately must make a decision whether we're committed to expanding civic broadcasting, whether we're committed to sharing our treasure with the world and so on. And those decisions have not yet been made.
Thanks.